there are really two parts to this morning's gospel lesson. There's the beginning part about divorce and the ending part about children. And I discovered that most of the commentators skip over the part about divorce and go on to talk about children. How nice. But I'm not going to do that today. Because I think there's something that we need to focus on and that this church is desperate to understand. Jesus' words about divorce are unequivocal. He leaves no wiggle room, no room for doubt. Divorce is sin, plain and simple. He couched it in friendly terms for his enemies as he addressed the Pharisees, but when his disciples questioned him about it again, thinking that he might have been more harsh, he was even more harsh with them. Divorce is sin, plain and simple. No wiggle room. It occurred to me to ask, however, why did they ask Jesus this question? Why this interest in divorce? And I came to discover that in Jesus' day, this matter of divorce was a raging controversy. There were lots of people talking about it, and it was right in the headlines of the Jerusalem World News. You remember, don't you, that Jesus' kinsman had recently lost his life. John the Baptizer had been executed by Herod the king. And why was John executed? Because John made an issue of the fact that Herod had divorced his wife and married his brother's wife. And John made issue. And so John was arrested and imprisoned and eventually executed for speaking out in such a bold way. In addition to that, in addition to those headlines, the matter of divorce was before the people for this reason. There were two rabbis who were great teachers, and they held differing opinions on what was an appropriate reason for divorce. Rabbi Shammai said that the only acceptable reason for divorce was sexual impropriety. No other reason would suffice. But Rabbi Hillel said any reason was sufficient cause for divorce. That if a woman burned her husband's breakfast, he was legitimate in divorcing her. If she put too much salt in his food, if she spoke to another man on the street, if she let her hair down in public, if she spoke disrespectfully to her husband, he could divorce her, and legitimately so. And surprisingly enough, it was that latter view, Rabbi Hillel's view, that was commonly accepted in Jesus' day, and in fact, divorce was common in Palestine in Jesus' time. It was an everyday occurrence, happening all the time, all around. And so it was an appropriate subject to ask Jesus about. It was something very much on the minds of folks then. And because of that circumstance, you can safely assume that if Jesus were addressing the issue today, the circumstance being the same, it is a common matter, that his response would be fairly much the same. Circumstances haven't changed, so why should his response? Divorce is sin, period. Well, I have to tell you that Jesus' intent in saying what he said was not to punish people who have experienced divorce any more than it is my intent to do that today. It was not his intent to punish people who experienced divorce, but rather it was Jesus' intent to say something very important about the nature of sin. And that's what I want to talk with you about for a few moments. Because this is the thing that many do not fully comprehend. What is sin and its nature? Typically, we think of sin as being wrong choices. When we have the opportunity to steal or not to steal, and we steal something, we commit a sin. When we know what is true and what is untrue, and we tell a lie, that's a sin. When we hurt someone else, whether it is with words or with fists or with guns, it is a sin. So sin is, in part, the choices that we make. But what you need to know is that sin is much worse than that. Much worse than that. There are times when you are faced with a choice and you don't have a good option. You don't have a choice to make that will yield good instead of evil. Is divorcing a sin? Jesus said yes. Is staying in a destructive relationship a sin? You bet it is. Is terminating your spouse a sin? Yes, that's a sin too. Sometimes we find ourselves in circumstances and in situations where, though we have several choices about the action that we take, none of those choices are good. They're all destructive and to some extent unsatisfactory and evil. They are all sinful. You have heard, I'm sure, the story of the great martyr of World War II, Dietrich Bonhoeffer. Bonhoeffer was a citizen of Nazi Germany, and he, a theologian and a pastor, was deeply distressed over the events of his day. So Bonhoeffer took part in a plot to assassinate Adolf Hitler. The plot failed, and Bonhoeffer was imprisoned and later executed for what he did. But he faced that kind of situation where he had no good choice. Was it a sin to stand idly by while Hitler pursued his murderous rampage across Europe? Yes, it was. Was it a sin to attempt to kill Hitler? Yes, it was. Was it a sin to look after oneself and ignore the plight of others, to escape to safety when the opportunity came and leave family and friends in Germany to fend for themselves? Yes, that was a sin too. And Bonhoeffer had that opportunity to get away himself. He didn't have a good choice. It was a sin to let things go. It was a sin to run away. It was a sin to take action. What to do? In that kind of circumstance, you do the best you can. You choose the choice. You make the choice that has the best opportunity of producing the best good. But none of the choices are good. So you see, my friends, sin is a matter of making bad choices and not making good ones at times. But sin is worse than that. Sin is getting caught in circumstances where we don't have a good option. We don't have a way to respond that is perfectly good. But you know, sin is worse than that. Not only do we create sin by making bad choices, but we participate in systems that are sinful, even when we don't intend them to be, because even the best things are corrupted by sin. We live in a nation that was created that all might enjoy liberty. And we have a vast system of laws to preserve and guard that liberty. And yet, the very laws that guard our liberty also provide enough liberty for criminals so they can distribute drugs on every street corner in the nation. You see, even systems, governments and institutions and churches that form themselves and intend to do good, even they are corrupted by sin, and sin enters them, undoing even the best purposes. We make bad choices sometimes. We get caught in situations where we don't have a good choice to make. We participate in systems of sin, but you know, sin is still worse than that. We are also, at times, the victims of sin. Innocent or not so innocent, still we are sin's victims. Who could possibly be more innocent than little Amish girls in their schoolhouse? But they and their families were sin's victims this week. And the week before, it was a school principal working at his school who was shot and killed in that place. Store owners are robbed. Banks are embezzled. Good people have destructive lies told about them. All are the victims of sin. Their lives are turned upside down. Lives can be ruined, undone. When the people who experience those things are at no fault themselves, but they are the victims. Well, I've painted a pretty bleak picture for you, haven't I? Sin overwhelms us. We can't dodge it. We're drowning in it. Early in the church's life, the leaders recognized this and they began talking about something called original sin. Now, original sin does not mean that babies are sinners from the moment of their birth. We know better than that. That's not the case. Original sin does mean, however, that from the moment of our birth, sin is inevitable. We cannot, as long as we're human, we cannot avoid it. We cannot dodge it. We cannot slip around the corner and miss it. Sin drowns us, surrounds us, captures us, traps us. It can't be avoided. In the face of this, in the face of sin, we are helpless to help ourselves. And this is the thing, my friends, this is the thing that Jesus recognized when he spoke to his friends about divorce 20 centuries ago. He recognized that this is the nature of sin. There are some times that we make bad choices. There are some times that we make wrong choices. And that's sin. There are some times that we get ourselves caught in a situation through no foresight of our own, caught in a situation where there is no good way to deal with it. There are times that other things, the systems that surround us, other things impact us in ways that we don't anticipate, and we find ourselves in a bad situation. And then there are times when we are the victims of other people's behavior, the victims of other people's work. In the face of all this, we are helpless to help ourselves, for sin surrounds us, captures us, and traps us, and drowns us. But despite that, as you know, there is great good news for us. The God whom we worship has not abandoned us to this circumstance and this sin. God does not leave us despairing for our broken lives and our desperate world. God does not leave us wallowing in our helplessness. God sent his Son to save us from all this. If sin were just a matter of making good choices and avoiding bad ones, Jesus would have been simply a teacher, one who teaches us how to make good choices and how not to make bad choices. But he is not only a teacher. He is a Savior, one who saves us out of a circumstance where we cannot save ourselves, one who saves us in the midst of a circumstance where we are drowning in sin, facing only sinful choices, surrounded by broken and sinful systems, the victims of sin. Out of all this, Jesus redeems us. He saves us. He promises to make us and our world new again. Sooner or later, though, sooner or later, you and I and we together must recognize the brokenness of our lives and the sin in our world. We must recognize the ways that we are both the creators and the victims of sin. We must recognize the ways that we are innocent participants in sinful systems and also trapped in sinful circumstances. Sooner or later, we, you and I, and we together must recognize that circumstance. Sooner or later, we must understand our situation and cry out to God, "Save me. I'm helpless to save myself. There's nothing I can do to get myself out of this mess. God, I need you to save me. I need you to do for me what I cannot do for myself. I don't know how my life got this way. This wasn't what I intended when I started out. I didn't intend to go this direction. I didn't want it to become like this. I don't know how I ended up here. All the things that impacted me and moved me, I didn't intend this for my relationship. I didn't intend this for my life. I don't know how I got here, and I'm helpless. Jesus, save me. I need your help because I can't see my way out of this. And in fact, I am helpless to help myself. Sooner or later, well, you know, there's a movement abroad in the church, the church abroad, where there's the feeling that when we come together for worship, that worship ought to be all about feeling good. Feeling good about ourselves and our world and our God. But my friends, it's not going to feel good when you begin to grapple with the realities of sin in our world and in your life. It's not going to feel good when God gets hold of you and begins to work God's redeeming work in you. And I want to suggest to you that it is only then and there that true worship can begin. Not in coming, you know, do you expect when you come to God in worship that God's simply going to pat you on the back and tell you how wonderful you are? Well, you're not. Neither am I. Because, not because of any evil that you and I have done necessarily, though there are things we could talk about. But you and I aren't the greatest simply because we're drowning in a world that's inundated in sin and brokenness. So when God calls us together and God begins to work with us, God first has to purify us, to prune us, and to use Jesus' term, to prune us, to work with us in the midst of this sin and to draw us through it and out of it and to extricate us from it. It's not always going to feel good. But that's where worship begins, when we encounter the God who is able to save us. And then begin to surrender ourselves and allow God to do God's saving work with us. Well, I don't know where you are in that journey. All of us are in different places. And chances are, my friends, if there was a time when you surrendered your willfulness to God and you recognize the circumstances of sin, you did that once, that's wonderful, but chances are you need to do it again, because sin has a way of, you know, it's like the waves on the seashore. It just keeps coming, and you think you've mastered one wave, and there's another one coming right after it, and we're never finished. That's part of the nature of sin. It's relentless, never gives up on us, but neither does God either. Listen to the words of the Old Testament writer of Lamentations. His life had been turned upside down, and he was tempted to despair of anything good ever coming again. His life was so broken and he was so defeated that nothing good would ever come of it. "I remember my affliction," he said, "and my wandering, the bitterness and the gall. I well remember them, and my soul is downcast within me. Yet this I call to mind, and I have hope. Because of the Lord's great love, we are not consumed, for God's compassions never fail. They are new every morning. Great is your faithfulness." And so we sing, "Great is your faithfulness. For it is not by our own strength or by our own wisdom, it is not by our own devices that we are saved, but it is by God's gracious faithfulness that we are saved." So we sing of God's faithfulness. And I would invite you that if you are in a place today where you are struggling with the brokenness of your life, for the ways that you have been embroiled in sinful circumstances, perhaps you are the guilty one, perhaps you are the victim, and through no fault of your own, you find yourself in a difficult place, come to the front and offer prayers to God. If you'd like someone to pray with you, there are lots of us here who would enjoy nothing more than to pray with you. But the kneelers are here for your use. Feel free to come and use them and to move forward in the struggle against sin, the struggle to release ourselves and those we love into God's care and keeping, so that God truly might save us. Amen.